comes to fungicides, there's only one way to spell yield. N-E-O. Miravis Neo is the 2024 number one retailer recommended corn fungicide for a reason. It dominates spots, rots, blights, and stress to out-yield competitive brands like Veltima. And there's 6 years of university data to prove it. Ask your Syngenta retailer about using Miravis Neo for more yield more often. Based on 2024 Stratus Retailer Efficacy Study. Always read and follow label instructions.
Guys, I have a very special episode of TFL Talking Trucks podcast because I'm at a very special place. This is the Mack Truck Museum, basically the history of Mack Truck. I think Mack Truck is a very recognizable name.
I believe so.
I'm here with Doug. Doug, you're the curator of the museum, is that correct?
I am the curator of the Mack Trucks Historical Museum, yes.
There you go. We're in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Truck capital of the world.
There you go. And so when you say Mack Truck to somebody, like my mom, my sister, anybody, my friend, they recognize the name immediately.
Immediately.
Mack Truck. I mean, you're celebrating, the Mack Truck company is celebrating 125 years.
Yes.
Correct? This
yes,
year.
Absolutely.
So 1900 was the first kind of the birth of the company. Is that fair to say?
That is correct. Yes.
So, but a lot of people don't know many other aspects of the company. They recognize the name. So on this episode, I really want to kind of go kind of deep, do a long haul podcast, I would say.
That's a good term.
Long haul?
Yes.
You like that?
Yeah.
So long haul podcast, kind of learn about the company. We're standing next to almost what, like a 5 foot tall statue?
Yes.
The gold bulldog. So should we start there? Why bulldog and why, what's going on here?
Well, okay. So the gold bulldog.
Yes.
All right. They have certain meanings, but the bulldog itself, why? Well, it all started in World War I. So in 1916, Mack introduced the AC model truck. Rugged, heavy duty, you know, for any purpose.
Yeah.
Just so happened that England ordered some AC Mack trucks for the war effort.
Okay.
They got the trucks over in England, outfitted them for work, and the look of the truck with its blunt nose and front crossmember that has kind of a rounded shape for the crank of the engine resembled the jowl of a bulldog. Placement of the headlights really just kind of visually had a resemblance to the English bulldog. Then it gets deeper. The English bulldog was a very different animal than what we have today. They were work animals. You know, they had pets, but they didn't have pets for only pets. The English bulldog was bred to do a job, and that job was to go into a corral and corner a bull so that the people could go in, you know, latch onto the bull and take it to where it needed to go. It was either a good day for the bull or a bad day. It was either gone to the butcher shop or was going to go make some more cows.
Yeah.
So this little bulldog was doing this tremendous job of capturing, of cornering this
very large animal.
Yes. So here's this truck, it was big at the day, but here's this truck. It's doing the work of hundreds of men, dozens of horses, and the look of it looks like a bulldog. So the English Tommies, soldiers, started calling it the Bulldog Mack. So whenever they needed a tough job done, they would bring out the bulldogs.
Yeah, and if you think of a bulldog, a very muscular,
very muscular
animal, I mean, kind of intimidating looking, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So that kind of makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that, in 1916 into 17, by 1918, the word had gotten back here to back to Brooklyn, or back to Pennsylvania at that point.
Yeah.
And Mack started using the word bulldog in their advertising.
So now, if we look around this room is, I mean, I don't know how big this is.
110 by 90, I believe.
Yeah. Or so we see a lot of different imagery, you know, of the logos of, and that it's a hood ornament as well.
Absolutely. So
to this day.
To this day.
Yeah.
Very subtle changes, but in 1932, the chief engineer for Mack, Alfred Majorie, was laid up in the hospital here in Allentown. So you take to somebody who's recovering from surgery. So you take to somebody who's used to working with their hands, and you put them in a bed and say, you stay here.
Yeah.
You know, they go a little stir crazy. I know I would. So you take that person, Alfred, he's laying in bed in a hospital. He gets a bar of soap, we figure, not positive, and his butter knife from dinner, and carves a bulldog.
Right there, okay.
Right there in bed.
Okay.
And when he gets out of the hospital, he shares it with management, and they like it well enough that that became the drawn-up design.
Like the pose.
For, yes, the pose, the shape, everything.
Okay.
There's a replica of his carving in a display case, which you can show. But that they liked well enough that that became the basis for the bulldog radiator cap ornament at that time. Which has donned nearly every Mack since 1933.
This underneath the glass, or this glass, is the replica of the carving.
A replica of the carving that was done by Alfred Majorie. And the next,
and it's also patented.
That is the patent. That is the actual patent for the bulldog radiator cap ornament.
And there's kind of some, you know,
the drawing,
some designs of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's the patent drawing, and then ultimately the radiator cap ornament.
There you go. All right, so here we're standing in front of a 1911.
Yes.
And I can see the sign here, Mack Jr.
Yes, Mack Jr.
Why Jr.?
Because it wasn't the senior.
Okay.
No, it was the weight capacity of the truck.
Okay.
So they started with buses in 1900. 1905, when they moved to Allentown, they started building trucks.
Okay.
So the early trucks were, you know, a certain weight capacity, up to 5 tons. The name given to the lighter duty trucks as they moved along was the Junior, and then ultimately the Senior.
Makes sense.
So
yeah.
This is the Junior model. This is 1911. This is the oldest truck that we have on display here at the Mack Trucks Historical Museum. So crank start, chain drive, of course. This is representing Arbogast and Bastion, which was the meat company here in Allentown, historic.
Can we look at the controls, guys?
Absolutely.
I'm wondering about this because we recently purchased, over the last several years, some Model Ts.
Yes.
So the earliest Model T Ford we had, or still have, is a 1915.
Yes.
And the controls are not typical to what we expected today.
No.
As far as brake, accelerator, yes, pedal, throttle. Is this similar to this it's somehow?
Similar but different.
Okay.
So
okay.
with the trucks, you have the clutch pedal, far left. You have the brake pedal, far right.
Okay.
And your throttle is in the center.
Okay. You can see it
and
here.
That is your throttle.
Okay.
But you have your throttle up on the column.
I call it the cruise control.
Yes. Essentially, is that's what it is.
Because so you kind of set the engine at RPM.
Yes.
Right?
You can set it and forget it.
Okay.
So essentially, these are more like farm tractors than they were trucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we know today, where you use your foot on the accelerator to increase speed or whatever.
Yeah.
Speed wasn't that much of a concern at that point because the roads were terrible.
Yeah.
Rocks rutted up paths of mud.
Mostly dirt
whatever.
And mud, yeah.
So you set the speed and you cruised. So the cruise would be setting the throttle and progressing on your way.
Gotcha.
You know, this has a 3-speed transmission. Then the emergency brake is the other lever. But magneto, this is the magneto switch.
Yeah.
Turn the mag on and off. Of course, there's no battery because of it has magneto start. So,
and all vehicles here you maintain; they're all runners, right?
Every vehicle in the museum runs.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Sweet. Can we show the chain drive really quick?
Absolutely.
Is it on this side?
It's on both.
It's on both sides.
Yes.
So let's show that over here.
Your jack shafts come out each side with your sprockets, your upper drive sprockets, and the chain goes down to the sprocket on your hub.
And there is still a solid axle, so it's not like it's kind of an independent situation, right? There's still kind of they're connected in the middle.
Yeah, they're connected in the middle with springs on each side, but this also has a cross spring.
Over
both springs. So almost, you know, it'd be almost like a helper spring.
So, and how much the capacity was on this?
This, I believe, was a 2.5 ton, if I recall correctly.
And things were not really measured in pounds. I mean, that's kind of where the current like, you know, the naming conventions.
Axle ratings and everything.
Yeah, like you say, like a F-150 or Chevy Silverado 1500 is a half ton.
Right.
That name no longer makes sense.
No.
But it's just something we say.
Yeah, it's...
Because, you know, that's kind of how it was born,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the size. Like, it's almost like it's just the fixed size of what the vehicle is. Yeah. They haul now, you know...
Way over that.
Yes, but...
And we call the dually trucks, you know, like a 3500, mm-hmm. one ton. But they can carry a lot more than that these days.
Yeah, the capacity of them nowadays is incredible.
Yeah. All right, very cool. So where do we go from here?
Well, another thing I want to point out to you here. So you know, we're so used to these projection beam headlights and all these, you know, super bright headlights. This has acetylene-powered headlights. So this is the acetylene tank.
Okay.
That has the tubes that run up to each of the headlights. So you light your headlights.
They're powered by fuel.
They're powered by acetylene.
You can kind of see that a little bit.
Yep.
And there's like a reflector, like a mirror.
A reflector, yeah.
So they were
as bright as they could be. You know, if you've ever lit in a torch, you know, acetylene torch, that's the brightness of it. But the reflector helped. And, you know, you were going 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you didn't need to see a half mile ahead of you. You needed to see, you know, 50 feet.
Yeah, and that did the job.
Yes,
yeah.
That did the job.
Okay.
So that's the Junior.
Junior. All right, let's move on.
So the AB. So this is our 23 AB. This is an all Mack dump truck.
Okay.
So Mack built dump trucks? Well, you know, like, yes, Mack built dump trucks. Mack built all kinds of trucks. But this specifically is an all Mack truck. Mack dump bed, Mack lift mechanism. Mack
so it
chassis?
Wasn't like the truck was upfitted by somebody else to become a dump.
No.
It was all built.
Everything
together.
Was built in-house.
Okay.
So when this truck left the property of Mack, it had a dump bed on it.
I gotcha. So this is also a chain drive.
This is also
what
a
year
chain
is
drive.
This?
This is a 1923
okay.
Model AB.
All right. And I see some wooden components too.
Yeah, insulator between the bed and the body
and the frame,
you know, rattle.
And the frame, all that stuff.
Yes. Yep.
And the chain drive for the dump as well, am I?
Yes, chain driven. That's chain driven dump. Yeah. PTO into a gearbox, shaft drive back to another jack shaft that controls the chain for the lift.
That's really interesting because these chains, I mean, they look similar to like a bicycle or a motorcycle,
yep.
But they're just massive.
Massive.
They're
same principle.
Like over an inch wide, very huge length.
Yes.
You know, the lengths are very, very big. So here is like my hand next to it. If you're watching us on TFL Talk Channel, just very large components.
Very large and very respected at the time, almost to the point where there were many like heavy haul customers that did not want to give up on chain drive. You know, if you think about it.
Old habits die hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Everybody's resistant to change.
Yes.
Not chains. but you could see your wear. You could see your sprockets. You could see your chains. You could adjust your chains.
You could see the slack, maybe?
You could see the slack. Yeah. You could adjust everything about this drive system so that if you're pulling, you know, heavy haul from one mine to another mine, you could watch everything. You know, they had oilers on them that kept them lubricated, and you could see what your wear is and how you're making out. This mystery box that, you know,
the transmission box.
Well, the differential developed.
Differential, yes.
And all of a sudden, you don't know what's going on in there, you know, as somebody looking at it. This you could see. So what it came down to is the last chain drive Mack that was built was 1951.
Really?
That long into the process.
Over 50 years?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about this rear tire because we saw kind of the dually tire configuration in the 1911.
Yep.
This is kind of a single, and this Is this steel? The rim itself, the wheel?
The hub is steel, huge. And the rim is steel, yes.
But the tire is not very thick.
No, there again, you get into, by 23, pneumatics had come to be pneumatic tires, air tires.
Yes.
But they weren't, they were good for cars, they were good for light-duty vehicles, but not necessarily good for anything that would haul a heavy load.
Reliability, durability, that type of stuff?
Plus, then again, you're looking at the road conditions. The roads were paths that were rutted and rocky, and if you didn't see a rock in the mud and you hit a tire, hit the rock with your tire's flat, and there you're stuck. Hard rubber tires for heavy haul.
Solid rubber.
Yep.
Yes.
Were the norm up through the 30s.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Till tire technology got better.
Can we show inside the cab?
Absolutely.
Really quick?
Yeah, this is an all-weather cab.
And fully enclosed.
Fully enclosed. You really have to enter from the other side because
because the steering wheel.
I know I'm not small enough to get through that little gap.
Yeah, and this is just like a hand width between the steering wheel and the door.
Yes.
And that's typical for most vehicles.
Oh yeah.
Day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you just entered in from the passenger side. Yeah. No big deal.
But it has two doors, interestingly enough.
Yep.
Right.
So yeah. Airflow in the summer.
Airflow and the front windscreen, you could tilt it
a little bit,
right?
Yes.
And
get
a little bit more.
And the side windows slide down and the rear window slides open. So, sliding windows in the 70s, the sliding rear windows were the big thing in pickup trucks.
Well, this is 23.
This is 1923. So technology just repeats itself. So I like to point out on that 1911 Junior, that has solid rubber tires. That's run flat technology if you word it the right way.
Yes. And we talked about cruise control.
And cruise control.
With the throttle on the column.
And climate controlled cab. What the climate is outside is what the climate is inside.
Oh,
that is true. Climate control.
I like your sense of humor. But now I'm kind of almost picking up on the bulldog face. We're kind of getting there, right?
We're getting there. This is the face of the bulldog. So you see the front crossmember, how it's rounded.
All right, so
be like a jowl.
Like a jowl, so the center is like higher.
Yep.
And the sides go down.
Yep, the radius.
Okay.
So we have this propped open. So you can see the engine in this beautiful truck.
Okay. So now I see the headlamps are like eyes.
Yes.
So to speak.
Yep. And the blunt hood.
Yes.
With the rounded, as the face of the bulldog.
Yeah, I can kind of see some resemblance there. Sweet. And are these air tires now?
These are pneumatic tires, yeah.
These are 1929 tires. Now, so this is the AK series.
This is the AK. This is the lighter duty version of the AK, of the AC, the AK model.
Okay.
So as things progress, as you improve, one of the major problems with trucks up to this time period where the gas tanks were under the seat. Mm. So if you needed to fill the tank up, you had to pull the seat base out and fill the tank and then put it. And they used fuel, they used gasoline. So
not
you
diesel.
Had to do that. No,
okay.
you had to do that fairly often.
Okay.
So on the AK, like I say, it's a lighter duty version. They had a little less GVW, but they moved the gas filler to the outside of the cab.
Thank goodness.
How about it?
Yes. So you don't have to move the seat.
Thanks,
you don't
still
have
under
to
the
do...
seat with a gauge even.
But it's kind of on the passenger side. Was
Absolutely.
There only one filler on the passenger side?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. In the curb side, as all vehicles should be. Yeah. Curb side.
Because right now it's not this way.
No. For whatever reason.
For pickup trucks specifically.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, you know, and the reason being, if you ran out of gas, you could stay off of the roadside to fill it up.
Yeah, safety.
Safety.
Safety-minded. By the way, I see the Bulldog is ripping some hauling costs.
Yes.
So, obviously, cost was important always.
Always. So this logo,
yes,
that is the International Motor Company logo, which International Motor Company was the parent company of Mack Trucks, started in 1911 when Mack went to J.P. Morgan to lend some money to expand. So J.P. Morgan does not lend money to an individual company. He lends it to groups. Okay. So Mack and Sauer, a truck manufacturer, joined together and under International Motor Company with J.P. Morgan's bankers, people leading the charge. Mack had the best rate name recognition, so ultimately it won out. But there was also another company that joined in called Hewitt, which is where Alfred Measury came in mm-hmm. from with Ed Hewitt. But with the success of the Bulldog advertising and the tie-in with the Bulldog, this plaque was developed in 1921 and was positioned on the side of each cab, nearly each cab, can't say all, mm-hmm. to as boastful advertising, really. So if you read this top to bottom, the Bulldog Mack, and that's a bulldog chewing up a book uh-huh. on which is written hauling costs. Uh-huh. So the Bulldog Mack will destroy your hauling costs. And their slogan was performance counts. So you knew
everything was very simply laid out.
Yeah. When you're standing on the curb and that truck pulls up and you're waiting to cross the street and that plaque is ultimately eye level.
Well, it's eye level. Yes, exactly.
You're seeing, oh, that's a Mack truck. You know, so the name recognition sticks.
By the way, I asked you about the Bulldog, but yeah. I didn't ask you about Mack itself.
Okay.
Where is that from?
So Mack is a last name, is a family name.
Okay.
So German immigrants in the 1850s moved to America.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they had five sons, two of which were Jack and Gus.
Okay.
So Gus went to school in Scranton to become a bookkeeper, an accountant. He ended up working for a wagon and carriage builder in Brooklyn, New York, named Fallison and Barry. Jack, he was the middle child, he was the inquisitive one. He's the one that always liked to tear things apart and put them back together. So he ended up doing many different jobs, most of which related around steam engines, steam power, because that was the power
yeah,
of the day.
Exactly.
So, stationary steam on railroad construction, ultimately steam power on ships going to Central America. He spent some time on the Panama Canal project. He made its way back to Brooklyn with Gus and joined Fallison and Barry in 1890. Within 2 years, he learned to run every piece of machinery in the shop that were used to make wagons and carriages. 1893, the owner was planning retirement, so they purchased the company, Fallison and Barry. They dropped the carriage line and focused on commercial end of it, wagons, and started a repair shop for wagons because the economy was on a downturn at mm-hmm. that point. So they were repairing wagons and building wagons. All the while, Jack still has this, you know, interest in steam and building a self-propelled vehicle. He tries to build a steam-powered vehicle. And it works, but he wasn't really happy with the outcome. So he tried an electric vehicle. And it worked, but he wasn't happy with the outcome.
Once again, everything that's new is old.
Cyclical.
And, yeah, cyclical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, internal combustion engine. In 1900, he is building a vehicle and ultimately gets funded by Harris, who is a concessionaire in New York City, who does tours through Prospect Park and different areas of the city. And he commissioned them to build that vehicle into a bus. So in 1900, they built the first bus,
which is a Mack. Sweet.
The first bus is a Mack. Yeah. The first Mack is a bus.
Gotcha. As we move forward, I want to talk to you a little bit more about engines.
Sure.
Like we mentioned gasoline power,
yes.
Right? So diesel engines were kind of around, right?
But
they were large, or maybe sometimes small, sometimes way too large.
They were, more of an industrial situation, but kerosene, not necessarily the diesel. Classic Cummins really pushed the diesel side of things, and that was later on. But it wasn't until 1938 Mack introduced their version of a diesel engine, and it worked. It had
so like an in-house design.
Yeah, it was in-house, but it was with Lenova.
Okay.
So it had pre-combustion chambers in the head, and they worked. They worked well up into 52. When they brought out their Thermodyne diesel engine, and that's a different story. That engine and that powertrain in the truck introduced in 1953 revolutionized trucking, which that's over here.
Okay, we'll get there soon. But like in 1929, this AK series that we just looked at, about 77 horsepower, it says.
Yes.
But the large displacement still 471 cubic inches.
Yeah. Hand crank.
But is this a force? How many cylinders?
Four cylinder.
These are huge cylinders.
Yeah. There's six inch bore.
Yeah.
5.5 inch stroke or vice versa.
All right. What's next?
Okay. Fire apparatus.
Okay.
So Mack had a huge following in fire apparatus. So at one time, every piece of motorized equipment in the New York Fire Department was Mack. And that was when they had fire stations on, every three blocks or whatever, So they initially began building fire trucks in 1911, first one went into service in 1912. So motorized fire apparatus. This is a 1943 model 50S. This is a 50S. This was donated to us from Colonia, New Jersey. It started life in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and it was a wartime truck. So at that time, the only shiny pieces on this truck would have been the stainless steel strips on the side of the hood.
Okay.
Because all of the chrome and everything, stainless, went to war production. So we have photos of this truck when it was new with painted, not a chrome bulldog, just a painted bulldog, painted grill, everything. So when Colonia redid the truck in 77,
they chromed some of these pieces
and dressed it up some.
And now this is a 1943 model here we're looking at. And are we now to kind of traditional operation?
Yeah. So now in the mid-30s, they went to the traditional configuration
that we know now.
Yeah, throttle, clutch, brake.
And also the transmission shifter.
Yeah, transmission shifter.
Very similar to what it is now for a manual transmission.
Yep. We've been working on this this truck, just updating wiring and such, because, it's that many years old. So it needed just cleaned up some. So we've been working on this.
But it's very cool. And so you do guided tours for the public as well.
Yes.
What, 3 days a week?
Yeah, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Okay.
Online on our website, MacTrucksHistoricalMuseum.org, is a reservation system where you go in and sign up for a tour.
Okay, yeah. So, we're doing kind of this tour, but we're not seeing every piece. And also, it's one thing to listen to it or see it in the video, but also you could actually see it in person.
Yes.
I think the impact is pretty huge.
I think so. I'm a little partial, but yes.
And there's also something coming up, which is a sound room,
which
will blow your mind. It blew my mind already.
It's a special place.
Oh, I see a military vehicle.
Yes.
Military truck here.
So this truck is very special. So This is a Mack Model NM, 1945 NM. This truck was rescued from Fort Indiantown Gap, which is a military reservation down towards Harrisburg, National Guard and such. We got word that this truck was here in 2009. It was destined to be pulled out on the target range and used as a target on the firing range.
Wow, okay.
So, but we believe somebody there knew that this wasn't, that shouldn't be a target. You know,
they, it had some significance
yes,
to it.
Yes, there was more significance to this truck than, you know, than just their run-of-the-mill, you know, 6x6s and deuce and a half
yeah.
things. So they kind of parked it off to the side. It took us about 2 years to finally get a hold of the right person through their curator of their museum.
And this is an 09 you're talking about?
This is in 09, 2009.
Okay. And this truck is listed as built in 1945.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so it had remained on military bases its entire life until that point. So we went down in 2011, looked at it, and ultimately made the arrangements to bring it here and display it. It was rough. The bed was all but rotted off. The canvas was all gone. We got it here, and we wanted to see if it would run, but we thought the engine was locked up, but it wasn't the engine, it was the transmission, because there was no canvas roof. All the water was running right down the shift lever into the transmission.
Oh, geez.
And it was rusted like solid.
Yeah.
So we
pulled
the transmission out. No, we didn't replace, we rebuilt. So this is where I get sensitive about it.
Okay.
So, members of the Antique Truck Club of America help us with our restoration.
Sorry, there's an image of it, actually.
There's a photo of what it looked like when it showed up.
Okay. Kind of a sad state. So I can see why somebody was considering maybe using it as an asset for target practice.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's got historical significance.
It looked like it made a good target.
Yeah.
You know? So, members of the Antique Truck Club of America help us with our work around here. They're volunteers. And we started working on this truck. One of those volunteers was Hank Jamin, who at that time was 84 years old. And he had that transmission torn apart, scattered across the floor in front of him with emery cloth, cleaning every tooth of every gear to get it cleaned up to put back together. Okay. We put new seals, new bearings, put everything back together. That's the transmission that's in the truck today. And prior to Hank's passing, he got the ride in the truck.
That's very special.
Yeah.
And the fact that that was actually even possible to do.
Yeah.
Because I was imagining metal just growing together with rust. I was imagining something horrific.
No, they cleaned up well.
Okay.
They cleaned up well.
But this truck, as we're standing next to it, this is kind of what I think of a modern truck. It's very tall.
Yes.
It's way taller than me.
Yep.
It's got a large hood area.
Yep.
It's a 6x6 in this case. It's got two dually tandem axles.
Yep, tandem axle,
in the back.
This has 22-inch wheels, so this is really modern-day technology, for as far as that goes. And really, when you think of it, from the mid-30s till today, the trucks themselves have not changed drastically. They throw more stuff at them, but there's the configuration is pretty much the same.
Like the dimensions of
the and the layout, straight frame rails, spring suspension, air ride suspension nowadays. But we haven't even got into that. But the innovation of Mack. So Mack has innovated the industry through the years just incredibly. And one of the innovations that came to be in 1934 for Mack was the Camelback rear suspension. 1934.
What does that mean? Can you explain that?
It's the spring comes back and humps up over a center trunnion to the from the front axle up over the trunnion to the rear axle.
Okay.
Which we have an example of here. And you can still get that suspension on a truck today.
And this was in the 30s?
This 1934 it was introduced.
Yeah.
And you can still get that suspension today. It's by far one of the greatest suspensions ever devised.
And I think, the company doesn't survive and thrive for 125 years without innovation, right?
You have to have it.
Pushing the limits
right.
In some way, one way or another.
Right. And they have done that all along. The AC, rubber shock insulators, rubber mounting on the spring ends. The AK back there has a rubber steering wheel to prevent shock from going into the driver's hands and arms while they're driving. Mm-hmm. All those little things that are innovative, and now today they're taken for granted. And we have many more of those to show you along the way.
I see. All right, let's keep moving. I don't know, we may not be able to see everything, like
nope,
I said, but people will have to come over here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have it here.
So there's the Camelback suspension.
This is the suspension spring that we're talking about. So kind of this hump.
Yep. Affixed to an axle in front, up over, trunnion, center trunnion, and affixed to the axle in the back. So you get pivot,
yeah,
and you get compression.
And compression on both
individual
sides. And there's a damper here too,
yes,
or a shock absorber as well.
Absolutely.
Associated.
Yeah, that keeps it from hopping.
Yeah, associated with this, mm-hmm, here. You could also see kind of a cutaway of the brake drum and the shoes and kind of the bearings.
Brake system, yeah, the hub, the brake, the seal. Cutaways. We have lots of cutaways. We use cutaways nearly every day in our research. That's one of the main things, the main purposes of the museum is research. We answer about 1,000 requests a year for individuals and 500 for dealerships who are working on older Macs, keeping them running. And
you could see, can you just explain this for a second?
The spring brake.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the spring brake. So in today's air systems, started in the 60s with spring brakes. So your air pressure is what applies your road brake, your service brake.
So the air pressure is hitting against the spring. Right?
Yeah, your air pressure is getting hitting against a diaphragm, which pushes your spring, which moves your slack adjuster, which turns your S cam and spreads your brakes apart,
yeah,
to stop the truck.
Yes.
If you lose air pressure,
the spring
in
comes
your system,
back.
The big spring out there pushes the brake on so that you slow down.
So it fails in the closed position, so to
yes.
speak.
So
it
yes.
fails. It's
with
designed
no
to
pressure.
Fail with no pressure in a stopping situation.
Yes.
Not a runaway situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
and
a lot of people don't understand that.
Right. If you've already heated up your brakes, there's nothing you can do. If you've already heated up the pads and the drums, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
But in a loss of air situation, that will stop you.
And that's why you see, we're from Denver, Colorado, mm-hmm, so mountain driving. You see a lot of runaway truck ramps,
yes,
yes, throughout the highway systems,
yep,
and yeah, let's not talk about overheated
brakes. No, that's
brakes.
Not.
That's
not
worries
a good
me.
Thing.
That worries
yes.
me.
So,
but we already saw a lot of hood ornaments. I mean, that military truck had a hood ornament.
Well, that one's actually just a magnetic one on there.
Oh, okay.
During wartime, they would
yeah.
not have had one on.
Because
but,
why?
Yeah.
You know, it was...
So it's one of those stress cushy stress ones that I put magnets on because it's a Mack truck. It really should have
yes.
a bulldog.
But
so,
here we
but
see.
We
I mean, the fire engine had a
yes.
had a bulldog. This is 1955.
Yep.
Once again, hood ornament.
Mm-hmm.
So just representing the company, right?
Absolutely.
Just representing.
Right out front there. Leading you to work every day.
And based on that carving,
based
the original
on the
carving.
Yes.
yes. Which significant truck should we go to
B
next?
B series. The B series is, these three right here represent the B series of trucks. So the B model, introduced in 1953. You can see streamline, aerodynamic, history repeats itself.
Swept back windshield.
Absolutely.
Windshield is a little bit angled.
Everything's round. There's very, very little square on this truck.
Uh-huh.
So aerodynamics, but when you have round, you have strength. So the B cab was the first cab that was designed by Mack to not have wood structure.
And still, but still be very rigid,
but,
right?
But be very
yeah,
rigid.
And
so
safe.
The L model, which was the predecessor to this truck, and the E model, which was the predecessor, they were designed with wood frame cabs. And then converted over to steel frame cabs,
okay,
where this was the first cab
all
by
steel.
Mack that was designed to be an all-steel cab. And like I say, with curves, you get strength. So driver safety.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is this still, this is still a gasoline engine?
This is a gasoline engine.
Okay.
So this is a big truck.
Yeah.
Visually size-wise, this
visually
is a
very
big truck. But this has a six-cylinder inline six.
It says Thermodyne.
Thermodyne.
Yeah.
Which was a name given to their powertrain, their engine design. This was built for New England. So the roads in New England, you know, were little curvy, windy roads. So single axle, but heavy weight capacity. So big rubber, big tires, 24 inch, and, you know, the dump bed. And the top speed on this thing's at 35 miles an hour.
But also a 10 speed transmission,
yes.
It says.
But
so
yes,
you have a lot of gearing. A
lot of gears to get to 35.
Yeah.
Or to slow down from 35.
But to move that weight,
yes,
right? You needed gearing.
Yeah. And you weren't worried about speed. Because the road would not support anything over
the
speed, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So when you're carrying weight, you got 35 miles an hour.
And to slow down as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and braking.
Yeah.
You know, it all comes down to, you can go as fast as you want. Stopping is the problem.
I love cutaways too, because you could look like you, like we were talking, like the, kind of like this black box concept.
Yeah.
But to see inside of it and then understand how it works.
Right.
That's very easy to do.
Yeah, like I say, we use these every day in one form or another, whether it's an engine or rear, because somebody will call in with a question or write in with a question on through the website. I need, the number for this lock, for this bearing on this shaft. And we come out here and say, oh, this is what they're looking for. Then we can match that up in our records, in our books back here to get them the proper part numbers that they need.
Got it.
So the B series, to progress onto the B, this truck right here revolutionized trucking. This was 1953, introduced with the Thermodyne diesel engine, with the Mack transmission,
uh-huh.
Mack rear, Pedigree powertrain. You took, when you had to get your truck worked on or serviced, you took it to one place because they knew how to work on it.
Everything
all
worked. Yeah.
Because it was all the same. It was all Mack. It's been said if you were in trucking with the B model and couldn't make it, you should not be in trucking. They were durable, dependable, economical. When you left with your truck at the beginning of the week, you knew you were going to make it home. And prior to these trucks, You drove as far as you could get till you had to work on it. And then you worked on it
and
alongside
you,
the road, and then you kept going. And then, and come Thursday, you're three quarters of the way through your run, and you're not going to make it home for the weekend,
mm-hmm.
And there's the wife and the kids wondering where you're at, So with these trucks, you could make it home. Every manufacturer wished they could have had this truck. And every driver wished they could add this.
Can we see like an engine cutaway really quick?
Yeah.
Is there a diesel one?
There's one right here. Now this is the more modern version, but it's each side.
So we were talking about gasoline engines for a little while. And the first diesel engine, we're talking about like high 100s of horsepower, 170, 180,
mm-hmm.
maybe 200, 210. So these are not super, super powerful engines, but we talked about gearing
as well. Yeah, gearing and torque.
Which was very important,
yes.
and the torque as
inline
well.
Inline torque.
Which engine is this?
This is a Mack E6, so
okay.
This is from the 80s.
Okay. So you can kind of see a cutaway of different components. Is there a cylinder on the other
side?
No,
there isn't on this one. I thought there was, but there's not on this one. But, this really, this focuses on, fuel pump. So, this is the fuel pump,
This is pretty large.
Yeah. So, it weighs, there's weight here. So you got your injection pump itself with your, they're like little engines. They have pistons in there that force the fuel to each cylinder. They're all timed. This is your governor and everything in there. But it's driven off the accessory drive off the front of the engine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your compressor, your air compressor for your...
Which is also an engine.
Which is a little engine.
Little piston.
Yep, a little piston engine.
There's a big piston, so there's little pistons mm-hmm. and smaller pistons, and it's all mechanical. It's all working together.
Yep. your valve train. You know, this is your your valve train. You got your push rods, you got your valves up on top, moving your, or your rocker arms moving your valves, all driven off the camshaft.
Sweet. I want to check out maybe the cab over.
Sure.
And I want to go in the other room really quick as well.
Absolutely.
Because the other room is really cool.
It is. I think so. There again, I'm partial, but.
Yeah. Ah, the cab over. Now, there is something I want to talk to you about, ask you, because I was recently in Germany, and all you see is really cab over trucks.
Right.
And it's kind of related to kind of the regulations on size.
Yeah, overall length.
Of vehicles, overall length. You know, they have smaller, narrower roads, smaller spaces.
Tighter radius or tighter turning radius and all that stuff.
And you don't see a lot of cab overs here these days.
No, they went away in, you know, the last Mack cab over that was built in America was the MH, the Ultraliner. And the last ones of those were built in 95. Mostly for export, but 93 was about the end of them here in the States.
And what about like specialty trucks? I mean, we talked about fire engines, apparatus, but like specialty extreme duty vehicles.
Mack had an off-highway line that was incredible, and that started, you know, in the 20s. Boulder Dam was built on the back of Mack's. You know, hard rubber tires, there again, carrying the load, on up through, Panama Canal. You know, I mentioned Panama Canal where Jack worked on earlier. They used LPs and NWs down there, all-wheel drive, super heavy-duty trucks. For doing construction work, mining.
Yeah, specialty.
Yeah.
Like garbage disposal vehicles.
That's any vocation.
Vocational.
You know, Mack has a vehicle for.
Yeah.
You know, the MR was introduced in 1977 for 78. And, you know, that essentially that truck is still on the road today. And you could buy that truck new in a Terra Pro.
Yeah.
So cab over engines.
1979.
Yep.
So we're looking at one here. This looks, if we look underneath the cab just for a second, this looks like super high tech. I mean, there's like fairings in here. And can you explain some of this?
I can pretty much explain most of it.
Yes.
So this was a test truck. So we had mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about that further, in the sound room, legislation. So in the 70s, fuel crisis. So fuel economy was a major push. Plus, the speed differential between trucks that were loaded, climbing grades, and cars, passenger cars, you know, that were just tooling along. So the speed limit at that time was 55 miles per hour. So the government was proposing that trucks should climb grades loaded at 55 miles an hour.
You know, gosh, that's a tall ass.
Yeah, it is. You know, 73,280 pounds climbing a grade at 55 miles an hour. Take a lot of horsepower, a lot of power, a lot of torque.
Most current trucks don't do that.
No, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah.
Okay. So Mack as a manufacturer was owned by Signal Corporation at the time, who also owned Garrett, which was the turbocharger and turbine manufacturer, who owned Air Research. So this is an Air Research GT601 turbine engine, essentially a helicopter engine that was designed and installed into a Mack chassis cruise liner, WS model cruise liner, Western built, with Mack transmission to test. So with like a generator, if an engine runs at a constant RPM, is it more fuel efficient than one that you control the throttle with your foot? So with this, it idled at 16,000 RPM.
Whoa.
And in run mode, in drive mode, 31,000 RPM. So what they were thinking is you run the engine at a constant RPM, the drive line takes up and makes the speed, so it you know, you
translates
control
it
like a torque converter.
Yeah,
translates it into forward momentum. It worked. they took this cross country in tests. They took it to Yuma, the sister truck to this, to Yuma, and pulled, you know, the tanks up the hill and everything, along with
hot temperatures, yeah, all that stuff.
And they took them to Europe and traveled through Europe with them to display the turbine power in a Mack vehicle. Ultimately, they didn't prove to be as fuel efficient as they had hoped, so they backed off of it. And at that time, you know, they were increasing fuel economy on diesel engines, so it just kind of fell to the wayside.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. Now I understand why this looks so unique.
This looks so unique.
Because is that the exhaust in the center?
Yes.
And gigantic intakes
air
as
intakes.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a helicopter would be.
Absolutely.
Like you
it's
were saying.
It's the same principle in the engine. So this was one of the test trucks. They had built three, an R model, a Superliner, and this cruise liner. This is the remaining test truck. It was donated to the museum in 1984 when the museum was incorporated as an independent nonprofit organization, independent from Mack Trucks.
Gotcha.
So that's when this truck came to be, and we've had it ever since.
Sweet. Before we go to the other room, there's a couple of cutaways of engines.
Yes.
And these are massive V8 style engines.
Yes.
Because most current vehicles are inline sixes, right?
Right. Right.
But these are 998 cubic inch.
Yes.
So almost 1,000 cubes.
Right.
These are massive cylinders.
They're coffee can cylinders. If look, you're old enough to know what a coffee can is.
Yes.
You know,
so
those are coffee cans.
I can
cans
put my hand almost just freely inside, yes, of this cylinder without any issues. They're a humongous displacement.
They
over
are
16 liters, right?
Yes. Yeah, they no these yeah, these I don't know.
1,000 cubes.
Yeah, it's yeah. 16 point
something. Yeah.
But yeah, these engines were the V8 diesel was one of Mack's offshoots in the late 50s, early 60s. They started with 864 cubic inches on up through to the 998 cubic inch. They had 1,005 there for a little while, but that became this engine. One of the sweetest exhaust notes you'll ever hear is out of one of these engines.
Do you have some running trucks with this?
Oh, absolutely.
Which ones?
One outside and one in storage back here. They're phenomenal.
Can we fire one of them up today?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Please.
Whoa.
Please, can we?
Yes, we should.
I have one in a Superliner at home.
Okay.
And we went to a show up at the Fleetwood, up at Plunkett's place in London, Ontario. So it's a 7-hour drive. And I took my Superliner, pulled on a trailer, and I had each window down about that far.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I listened to the whole drive.
Just the engine.
Just beautiful,
yeah,
sound.
All right, well, we should start one and listen to one now. All right, this is a cold startup on Mack Magnum. 998 cubic inches of V8 turbo diesel. This is one of the more legendary vehicles, working truck, that's now been basically brought back to like a show condition. And it's got crazy powerful, almost 1,000 cubic inch, 16 and a half liter, almost, turbo diesel V8 with at least 500 horsepower, maybe way more. Nobody knows. And so much torque, you don't want to even know about how much torque it has. Step inside. 3 points of contact, right?
Right.
Wow, tell me about this truck.
Well, this is on loan to us from a very good friend of the museum.
Okay.
Jim Rimes, J&H Rimes and Daughters. They have a collection of vintage Macks and other trucks as well. And they are based in Florida.
Okay.
So this beautiful specimen, this is a 1985 Mack Magnum. This is one of 186 that were built with the Magnum package. And the Magnum package was to highlight the new 500 horsepower E9.
Whoa.
So the engine we saw earlier with the big coffee can cylinders.
So that's like 998,
yes,
basically.
Yes, 998 cubic inches. This truck was originally built at 450 horsepower. You could specify if you wanted 400, 450, or 500. This was built with 450. But the restoration that was done by another good friend of the museum over the last few years, I'm not even going to say where it ended up horsepower wise.
But it could be more. Could be more.
It's a couple more.
Okay.
Couple
times. You wouldn't make it less. Would you make it less?
No, not in my world. But it's a couple times more.
Look at this view. It looks like a big table. Like we're gonna have like a fancy meal.
Yes, a picnic table, so to speak.
Like a very big table, and there's a bulldog right there in the front.
Why would there not be?
Yes.
Any truck should have a bulldog on the front.
All right. Well, can we listen to this truck and take
it
for a little spin?
So. Okay. That's
actually
worth its weight in gold.
Well,
right
that
there.
Revs kind of quickly.
Oh,
doesn't it?
This is above stock a little bit.
So this is running at what idle? It's like 700, 800?
Yeah,
700. 800 RPM?
Yep.
And the red line is where?
On a typical diesel, it's 2100 RPM.
Yes.
On this one, I'm not sure because I've never driven this truck to full capacity.
Yeah.
So I don't even want to.
This doesn't belong
this
to
is
you
not,
or
this
the museum.
Is on loan to the museum.
We're not going
to
do burnouts today.
No, not today.
Not today.
Not today, Jim.
But maybe another day.
Maybe another day.
All right. Well, let's take it for a little spin.
This is not the standard dash. This is an all steel constructed dash, painted rosewood.
Yeah.
This is a little bit above and beyond what would have come from the factory in 1985.
And there's a sleeper portion in the back.
60-inch sit-down bunk.
How many gears?
This is an 18-speed.
18. So this is like... This is a full-size over-the-road truck.
This was the top of the line in 1985. This was what every truck wanted to be. This is the truck that Mac from the movie Cars is based upon.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I can see the resemblance.
Yes.
And I can hear a little whistle, right? The turbocharger.
Yep.
Is it one or two?
This is one.
One. I can hear the V8 character to it.
Yes. Yeah, it's because, you know, the Whispering Giant is what they were known as in the 80s. Whispering Giant, and there was one truck specifically called Thumper because it had that, you know, the thump to it.
But it still feels like a working vehicle, right? I mean, you're sitting kind of forward.
Yep.
The steering wheel is very large.
Very large. This, you could put this to work today. You could put this truck to work today. Actually, he's coming up for this in May, and he's probably going to pull a trailer home to Florida with it.
Can we give it another little acceleration?
Oh, yeah. It's quite the beast.
That's a lot of cubes.
That
is a lot of cubes.
You know, it's hard to feel it without load. When you have load, that's when you feel the true power of the E9.
Yeah, yeah.
They just pull. If you ever watched any of the highlights of truck pulling on YouTube and things,
like those big heavy trailers,
the
like lumber,
there's a fellow up in Canada that has a white Superliner with an E9 in it that he does very well. and the Buckeye Bulldog from back in the 80s. They have, you could be sitting in the stands with your eyes closed or a blindfold on, and you knew when there was a Mach-E9 going to make
the just goal. By that just sound by character.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Doug, where are we going to now?
We are going into the environmental test chamber, okay. Which is what this room was used for when the facility was operational.
Okay.
We now use it as our restoration and maintenance area.
Okay. Aha, there's more trucks.
There is more.
There's always more
of
trucks.
Everything.
You wait, is this like a wind tunnel situation?
Yes, essentially this was a wind tunnel, but this was a dynamometer. So the environmental test chamber... Here's the diagram that shows the roller in the floor back there.
The single roller
situation. Drive a truck on.
Okay.
Chain it down. Still exists there. And run the truck sitting still with this air nozzle blowing up to a 60-mile-an-hour headwind at the truck. And this room could be taken from -10 to 110 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on what you were testing and what you wanted to test and what conditions that truck was destined for.
Okay.
Sun lamps in the ceiling would replicate a sun load. Let's say you wanted to test air conditioning in the cab, and you had truck designated for desert work. You could crank this room up to 110, turn the sun lamps on, and make sure...
So like little radiating heat or something like that, off the hood or something?
Yeah, off the top of the cab to make sure the air conditioning in the cab worked and kept the driver at a comfortable temperature.
Very, very cool.
So that's what this room... remote fuel source, so the truck could be run for weeks on end if you wanted to. They'd come out and check oil, do this and that, and then start it back up again. All of that was controlled from the control room, which is behind that window.
When was the facility not used for some of that testing?
2010.
And then it moved on to somewhere else.
Yes, moved to Greensboro, North Carolina.
Okay.
So we have now 38 Mach 505 fire truck that we've been slowly working on. It sat outside prior to us getting it.
Six-cylinder gas.
Yes.
I can see it here underneath the hood.
Yep. With twin spark plugs per cylinder because it had a magneto setup and a distributor setup. They wanted to make sure the truck would start when they went to the fire hall to get it out.
Reliability.
Yes.
Yeah. You see the roller right there? It's gigantic. Tandem axle would go on each side of it.
Yeah, we have these aluminum plates on just for clearance to walk around because we have the R model in here.
And so I don't fall in.
Yeah. So, and that is a Mach rear, and you can see the spoke hubs on each end of the drum.
Uh-huh.
So, and then the drums were attached to it. But this would absorb up to 1,500 horsepower, and it had a 500 horsepower motor that would drive the rear and drive the drums in case you wanted to test engine braking
Resistance to it, basically.
Yes.
Giving it some resistance. Or I imagine exhaust brakes or Jake brakes.
Exactly.
You can kind of test some of that as well.
Right. So that's, that's what we use. These are the fenders for on the R model. That R model was built to service this property. It's never really left the property. It's a six-wheel drive R model
snowplow basically, or a sand spreader.
With a snowplow or a broom to sweep the track.
Okay.
It's a 3/4 mile track that goes around the property here. We've been fortunate enough to take the R model in.
And it's still working.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, does the work?
No, we don't. It doesn't work.
Okay, anymore.
It's retired.
It's
retired to the museum.
Okay.
But the original paint, it's been buffed up, on the cab and hood. We did have a friend repaint the chassis because it was, of course, a salt spreader, and it was pretty
rusty.
Rusty. Yeah. So they did.
But he's retired right now.
Yeah, he's retired.
Okay.
We'll get the fenders back on. It has weights and everything on it that go back on the frame. We have to get those painted and such. But
cool.
But this is where we do our restoration. The NM military truck was restored in this room.
Okay.
Hank was sitting on a little caster wheel chair right over there with the gears of that transmission spread out across.
Just cleaning every gear.
Yes.
Okay. Doug, what is this? Is there money behind here? so to speak.
In a way of speaking, yes, there is some
this
money.
This looks like
back
a
here.
Bank vault door.
This is
or a safe. It looks like a safe.
That's a better description because there are some very important things behind this door.
Okay, let's go in.
All right,
let's go in. And I want to ask you why this door actually exists.
Well, you're going to see why.
Okay. Let's go through. Whoa. Now, this is called the sound room?
This is the sound room gallery. This is a semi-anechoic chamber.
That's a fancy name.
That is. That means little to no echo.
Okay. Very hello. Weird. This is really strange. Because it was a little bit echoey, but it felt normal in mm-hmm. that room.
Yes.
When I was talking to you, it felt normal because we were in a regular room.
Right.
Here, all the walls, and that's why the big door, right?
That's why the door, because the door on the backside is the same as the walls.
So this is the thickness. The door, this door is what, 2 feet wide?
Right.
Deep?
Yes.
And everything has these triangular shapes to deaden the sound, right?
To stop
sound. So this is what, like a music recording studio type
music of to my ears.
Music or lack of noise.
Yes.
Like purely. So why is this? Why okay. is this room created?
When the facility here was built and opened in 1975, the government was proposing legislation that trucks would have the same interior and drive-by noise levels as passenger cars.
And this was in the 70s as well?
Yes, in 70, yeah, that yeah. was 75, prior to 75, because this facility opened in 75 with this room.
So this room was empty. I mean, right now it's full of vehicles
right.
as well.
Yeah, when they were using it, there was nothing in this space other than the test vehicle. They were working on and their little control pod, you know, their little.
And there's two giant stacks in the ceiling. And this ceiling is how tall?
This is like 39 feet tall.
39 feet tall. This is a very impressive space.
You had to have three distances, three widths distance
in
three
every direction
heights in all directions
around
in order
the vehicle
to get proper sound reflection or absorption. It couldn't be closer to any one place than another.
So, and there were had a, you said they had a dyno here, so the truck could actually roll in this room.
It was actually a driveline dynamometer. They would hook the drive shaft to the dynamometer itself.
Okay.
So they would disconnect it from the rear end and just have it go into the dynamometer.
I see. And so they could study the sounds that each component
right.
made, or the interior sound as well, mm-hmm. and exterior
yep.
sound.
Right. So they would bring the truck in, hook it to the driveline dynamometer that would come up out of the floor, and run it sitting still with the exhaust ports pulling the smoke out as it was running. And then the engineers could place their sensors, their microphones, whatever they were using, you know, ear
yeah.
to, you know, different components on the engine, different components on the transmission, to see what was making noise. Whether it was valve train, injection pump, you know, they're noisy, timing gears, valve train, you know,
transmission,
anything that could be making noise, because they were trying to get the noise level down to a more manageable level, which, you know, to this day doesn't exist.
It's hard
because, yeah. you know, the fan clutch and the fan makes more noise than really nearly any exhaust today.
You know,
if you see a truck coming across a parking lot, it sounds like a vacuum cleaner, you know,
because it's trying to cool itself. Yeah. And also, we actually, Ian and I went, well, this is a long story, but a couple of years ago, we test drove one of the new electric hydrogen fuel cell trucks. Mm-hmm. They also create heat.
Yeah.
And there's also a fan. And you could hear the fan.
Yes.
Still.
That was the loudest part was the fan.
The loudest part was the fan, because electric motors are very, very quiet, mm-hmm. obviously.
Right.
I can see something very interesting in the corner.
Oh, the bulldog?
No. Well, the bulldog too. But the bulldog has glowing eyes.
Yeah, he does.
He looks a little sinister, I would say.
Well, you know, it could be because of his neighbor.
What's that?
Megatron.
Whoa.
The screen-used character from the movie Transformers Dark of the Moon was based upon a Mac.
Yeah, and you could see it here. I mean, if you've seen the movie, you would recognize this truck. It's got these apocalyptic, just movie prop.
Yes.
But it's a running truck.
It runs and drives.
Whoa.
I would love to take it home some some Friday evening just to clear traffic.
It's got the red light behind the windscreen.
Yeah, just to give it a little life.
Also, Mac has been, I mean, the company name, you know, has been 125 years, like we mentioned. But like the movie Cars, Mac is the truck that carries lightning.
Yes.
A McQueen.
Based on a Superliner.
So it's, exactly. So the it's been in the culture, you know, it's been in the fabric, basically.
There's certain brands, I feel, but there again, I'm partial because I'm a Mac nut, but there are certain brands that are world known and recognizable, you know, and you have your, you know, you have your soft drink companies and you have your motorcycle companies, whichever, you know, I don't have to name them.
Yes.
And you have Mack trucks.
Yes.
You know, when you see, you know, this Bulldog or that Bulldog, you immediately know Mack trucks.
Yeah. There's sayings about it. It's in culture. It's in movies. It's in cartoons. It's just in the fabric of the country, which is
woven in,
which is very cool.
You know, our tour of Mac history. So our tour of Mac history is really a tour of American history and world history, because Mac has influenced projects in the United States and around the world. Whether it's a dam being built in Ecuador or
Panama Canal,
The Panama Canal, or you know, there's so many aspects of today's life that were affected by a Mack truck one way or another, hauling goods, you know, hauling stone, hauling concrete, that you know, just gets overlooked. And that's why we're here, is to bring it to life and have people come and see how Mack affects their everyday life and you know, how it's made family life better for drivers and you know, workers
and their families
the
too. Yeah, yes, exactly. I want to look at a couple of transmissions.
Sure.
And the sinister Mack bull statue, is that that's related to the movie?
No. That's just one of the largest, you know, bulldog ornaments that
ever
that we have.
Okay. But I want to look at a couple of transmissions, and also I see air suspension here as well.
Yep, air ride suspension, which you know really has you know become the norm for you know for over the road travel,
big trucks, but
also you know construction work. You know, you have your heavy spring, and you have your air spring that gets pressurized with air and cushions the load.
A lot of people give like pickup trucks. Like, and also dualies, like Ram, for example, Dodge Ram, they use air suspensions too. And a lot of cars or SUVs and cars use air suspensions. And sometimes they have a bad name because what if it leaks? What if this? What if that? But we always say it's been used on semi-trucks for decades.
Yeah, Mack introduced their first air ride in 1957.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been around.
So, yeah, it needs to be serviced like anything else.
Everything should be serviced.
Yeah, exactly.
Whether you do or not, it's your choice. But, you know, that's the problem. People don't want to service. But if you service, you get longevity out of your vehicle.
Yeah. So we have a couple of transmissions, right, here?
Yeah.
These are
Mack Torques. Triple countershaft. So three countershafts, you know, to take the torque that was put out by a Mack engine. Because Mack engines always had an excessive amount of torque. So it took three countershafts spinning with gears to get, you know, from the input shaft to the output shaft to the rear.
Yeah. So the input side is here.
Yes.
From the engine. And then the output shaft, like you, there's a flange right there.
Flange there that bolts, you know, your U-joint, your yoke to for your U-joint to go back to your rears.
And these are manual, both of these. Both of these are manual transmissions. And manual transmissions are kind of going away these days.
Yes.
I mean, it's really a lot about computer controls.
It's a lot of
very precise.
It's a lot about emissions. It's all about emissions.
Yeah.
You know, if it was up to individuals, there would be no automated transmissions or very few. But it's all about emissions now. Government wants the computer to shift gears and give it enough throttle so that there isn't that puff of smoke out the exhaust.
Because it's more consistent, you know, with the computer or something?
Yeah, it's more consistent.
Okay.
The driver, a driver's foot might step a little harder on the throttle pedal than what it was needed to shift to that gear. But the computer knows exactly.
And also, these are how many speeds? Like 12 forward speeds, 5 reverses.
Yes.
We're standing next to one of these transmissions right now.
Yeah, that's a TRTXL 1070. That's a 12 speed with the AirShift back box. So all Mac transmissions used to be 5 speed. And you can see right here the back case is attached. So all Mac transmissions were this.
This size.
This, yep.
Okay.
And then if you wanted a duplex or a triplex or whatever, you would add on the auxiliary part of the transmission to get you your other speeds,
So like higher moving speeds, maybe.
Yeah, or lower.
Highway speeds or lower.
Yeah. In a construction application, it might be lower speeds.
Yeah. Like something that reminds me of this is, for example, I drove a Unimog off-road vehicle.
Yes.
And those are agricultural also.
Right.
And
a farm tractor, essentially.
You have to have a crawling speed, right? So you have a lot of gearing.
Right. And it's the same thing with a dump truck. You know, you're hauling blacktop and the pavers right there. So you have a speed that you need to go to stay with.
Very, very low speed.
Or spreading stone or whatever.
Can you talk about the air part of this?
Sure. So this has air actuated cylinders that move the shifting forks inside the transmission to get you your alternate gears. So those are controlled by the splitter and shift up on the shift lever. So this shift lever would stick up through the drive, you know, by the driver's leg, and it has in this it has three positions: reverse, neutral, and direct in this one, I believe.
Okay.
So when you flip it, it will send air to the cylinders and move the cylinders, which in turn move the forks to the proper location to put
those gears.
Yeah, to set that gear.
Yeah.
And this is your regular shifter to get you your main gears.
Yeah, and looking inside of transmissions, for me, it's like opening a brain.
Oh, yeah.
Something. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on. Even mechanically speaking, I'm not even talking about hydraulics.
Right.
even mechanically speaking.
Well, you know, and there again, when you look at the other side of this, it's just an aluminum case. You don't know what's inside there to make the magic happen.
Because we saw the chain drive.
Yeah.
Over
you
there.
Knew that was, you saw exactly what was happening there. That sprocket turns that chain down to that gear, and it works.
Yeah.
This, with this enclosed, you don't know how much mass is in there. You know, triple countershaft. There's three shafts in here with gears on.
Yeah.
You know, this weighs as much as engines do.
Yes, I believe it's humongous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's humongous. And I guess the only thing, I mean, these days, I mean, you can expect a fluid, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could change the fluid, right? You can take care of it.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense. Oh, this movie truck is still looming over us.
So this is his hideout. He resides here, and he has...
Hopefully he won't wake up.
Well...
He wakes up once in a while?
Every once in a while, we come in, and we have a very good staff at the facility here at the Mac Experience Center, and everything's usually really clean, and you know any scratches in the floor are usually cleaned off and everything. But sometimes we come in, and there will be a scratch in the floor in a really odd place.
Mm-hmm.
So we, you know, how you have your pet, you know, you get your cat or your dog, and it gets up from a nap and then stretches.
Yeah.
We wonder if sometimes Megatron doesn't transform to stretch and maybe causes a few scratches in the floor because of...
This could be a good visit for a family.
Oh, absolutely.
If you have...
We get so many families through.
Yeah, if you have like a kid, daughter, son, this would be very cool for somebody like that to see this.
Yeah, we get school groups through.
Yeah.
Clubs through. Yeah, it's... we're proud of what we have. I'm extremely proud of what we have here, because it's been, we were closed 3 years, 3 months, a few years back.
For COVID.
Uh-huh. And essentially, we restarted with a clean slate. I mean, the main gallery was just a floor and walls. So I've assembled it back into what it is today. And I'm so proud of what we have here. We didn't even dive into records. You know, I say we answer requests. Our archive is like 50 million pages mm-hmm. of information that we use to answer requests. And our earliest chassis build record is number 8, which is about 1903, a bus that was built by the Mack brothers mm-hmm. in 1903. And that's on paper. And we have microfiche and yeah. microfilm and aperture cards and, you know, paper and catalogs and brochures and spec sheets and data sheets and paint chips and service manuals and rebuild manuals all up through 125 years.
Yeah, well, you want to protect the heritage, right? There is heritage and there is information. And you can learn from a lot of this. I mean, we're talking about electrification, right? Mm-hmm. Getting electric big rigs.
Yeah.
Be it, you know, electric or hydrogen electric or maybe range extended mm-hmm. Electric. But a lot of that stuff, you know, existed prior in some way, one way or another.
Oh, yeah. On my desk right now, I'm doing some electric research where it was in the 20s, an AB, you know, like this. This is a 19 AB that had engine and transmission that drove a generator. Well, the engine drove a generator, and there's like three wires that come out of the generator and go to a motor that's hooked to the rear.
Which is the concept
the same
we're
thing
talking
we're doing
about
today.
Now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very, very cool. And I also, those big doors where the truck comes in.
Yes.
This room, the scale of those doors is pretty crazy.
they are large. That, if I recall, that is a 5-foot by 8-foot American flag. So those doors are 8 foot wide.
Yeah. And let me just stand next to it.
Yeah.
So I'm about 6'3", and I'm standing next to this door, and this door is dwarfing my size.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
So, yeah, you know, and there again, those doors swing shut, and, you know,
it becomes the wall.
The whole wall is panels.
You know, I needed that last night. I was staying in the hotel nearby, and the highway noise.
Oh.
I needed this.
Well, I thought maybe the neighbors were.
No. It was the highway. It was the highway noise that was out the window. So, can I stay here tonight?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, there's
I'm
a
kidding.
Hose bed on the CF. We'll lay out some nice hose.
And I appreciate it. I'm a little scared of the Megatron.
Well, you can keep an eye on Megatron to see if he doesn't transform.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for showing it. It's once again, we didn't see everything.
No.
We didn't talk about everything. There is a lot going on, and you could kind of pick, like you said, cutaways are very cool. Like, we see cutaways at auto shows these mm-hmm. days.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to an auto show, you could see the latest V8 engines or whatever, electric motors even.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really cool kind of to peek inside because it seems like magic. A lot of the time.
A lot of people just don't understand how it gets from your foot to the rear wheels.
Exactly. And it's like with anything. It seems like magic, but it's actually really cool to look inside of it and also see the history of it as well.
Yeah. So, you know, we have an amazing history. We're fortunate here at the Mack Trucks Historical Museum that Mack had the forethought to keep records. But they had to because their trucks keep running. So, you know, a truck that was built in 1920 was still on the road
in 1960. Or 1960.
So, you know, they had to keep those records in order to keep those trucks functional, you know, working. And we run into that today. Dealers contact us for information on trucks from the 60s that are still being used by their customers to do jobs.
Yeah. And it's like customer service, right? It's really important.
There's nothing better.
Yeah. And it's
like that makes the deal.
Exactly.
That makes the sale and makes the vehicle.
Right. Really appreciate it again.
Thank you so much. Great to meet you and hang out with you.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, this is interesting. What's going to happen or what happened in 2040 through 2059? Do we know?
Not yet, but I have a feeling we'll be recycling back to
some ideas.
And we'll be revisiting, you know, internal combustion engines and gasoline and diesel power.
I'm thinking about maybe levitation. You know, the trucks will be gliding maybe.
You know, the Jetsons was based in 2022, and I didn't see any
any gliding
vehicles, any flying cars, you know, in the past couple of years.
So. Okay. Well, this is interesting. Well, it's up to the audience, I think. So you guys, you tell us what happens here.
It's up to them to create the future.
And it's up to them.
And that's what it is. Go to school, get a job working for Mack, and you will drive the future.
When it comes to fungicides, there's only one way to spell yield, N-E-O. Miravis Neo is the 2024 number one retailer recommended corn fungicide for a reason. It dominates spots, rots, blights, and stress to out-yield competitive brands like Veltima, and there's 6 years of university data to prove it. Ask your Syngenta retailer about using Miravis Neo for more yield more often. Based on 2024 Stratus Retailer Efficacy Study. Always read and follow label instructions.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.